Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Phil Dierking and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a new report uses words like sweeping and methodical to describe sexual violence against Rohingya Muslims by members of Myanmar's security forces. Reporters with the Associated Press spoke with 29 women and girls who fled to Bangladesh from Myanmar. The youngest girl they spoke to was just 13 years old. The oldest woman was 35. One of the women in the report wanted to be identified as F, the first letter in her name. She told the AP that one night in June, a group of soldiers entered her home as she and her husband slept. Just days before, F found out that security forces had killed her parents. This time, she said, the soldiers had come for her. First, the men tied her husband up with a rope. They removed her headscarf and tied it around the husband's mouth. Then they threw her on the floor, and one of the soldiers raped her. She struggled against him, but other soldiers held her down. She watched in fear as another soldier shot her husband in the chest. Another cut his throat.
Associated Press reporters found what they called a sickening sameness among the descriptions from the women and girls. Each one said she was raped by a group of men. All but one woman said her rapists wore clothes like those worn by Myanmar's armed forces. The woman who said her attackers wore plain clothing said that her neighbors recognized the men as working at a local military base. Many of the women said the attackers' uniforms had either a star or arrows on them. The AP said those markings represent the different units of Myanmar's army. The attacks took place between October 2016 and the middle of September in Rakhine State, the AP reported. The news agency said doctors and aid workers are shocked by the number of rapes, but suspect only a fraction of women have come forward. The group Doctors Without Borders told the AP that its medical workers have treated 113 sexual violence survivors since August. It said that one-third of the survivors were under 18. The youngest survivor they have treated was 9 years old.
Crystal Van Leeuwen is an official with Doctors Without Borders. She told the AP, "The stories that they are telling us, and not only the victims themselves, but that other people are telling us about witnessing acts of sexual violence in Myanmar, make us feel that we're only capturing a small portion of the victims." The women's stories support the United Nations' belief that armed forces are systematically using rape as a calculated tool of terror against the Rohingya people, the AP said. It also said Myanmar's security forces refused several requests for comment. The news agency said the military carried out an internal investigation in November and ruled that none of the assaults ever took place. Aung San Suu Kyi, Myanmar's civil leader, has come under criticism from the international community. Some officials say her reaction to the Rohingya crisis has been too slow. The Nobel Peace Prize winner has said there has been a huge iceberg of misinformation about the issue.
Rohingya Muslims have been denied citizenship and other rights in Myanmar, a Buddhist-majority country. It considers them to be immigrants from Bangladesh. However, many Rohingya families have lived in Myanmar for generations. Myanmar's military has been accused of launching a scorched earth campaign against Rohingya villages. Military officials say the campaign is in response to attacks on police by Rohingya militants in August. Since then, 600,000 people have fled from Myanmar to Bangladesh. Some of the refugees have told rights groups of shootings, rapes, and other violent attacks by government security forces. They also accuse the security forces of setting fires to villages. The UN has described the reported actions carried out by Myanmar forces as a textbook case of ethnic cleansing.
On a recent program, we explained that knowing just a few root words in English can help you understand the meaning of hundreds more words. To refresh your memory, a root word is the simplest form of a word. For example, two forms of the root for the word see are vis and vid, such as in the words television and video. Today, we will tell you about prefixes and suffixes, groups of letters that appear at the beginnings and endings of words. Learning the meanings of common prefixes and suffixes can help you understand unknown English words you come across. It can also help you become better at spelling words. Let's start with prefixes. A prefix is a letter or a group of letters that we add to the beginning of a word. Prefixes change the meanings of words. For example, the prefix un or un can mean not, remove, or opposite. Adding un to the word happy gives you the word unhappy, which means not happy. UN and RE or RE are the two most common prefixes in the English language. RE means again or back, such as in the words rethink, redo, and repay.
Here are a few things to remember when learning prefixes. Number 1. Different prefixes in English can have similar meanings, such as un, in, and non, all of which mean not or opposite of. Also, the prefixes mis and IR mean wrong, wrongly, or incorrectly. Number two, notice that double letters are possible. For example, when you add the prefix IM to words that begin with the letter M, you get two M's, as in immeasurable. That's also true when you add UN to words that begin with the letter N, as in unnoticeable. The same is true for many other prefixes. Number three, when adding a prefix to a word, the spelling of the base word never changes. For example, the prefix UN did not change the spelling of the word happy, and the prefix RE would not change the spelling of the word live in relive. Number four, watch out for lookalikes, words that look like they contain prefixes, but in fact do not. For example, the UN in the word uncle is not a prefix, nor is the RE in the words reach or real.
Now let's turn to suffixes. A suffix is a letter or group of letters added to the end of a word. Suffixes are commonly used to show the part of speech of a word. For example, adding ion to the verb act gives us action, the noun form of the word. Suffixes also tell us the verb tense of words or whether the words are plural or singular. Some common suffixes are er, s, es, ed, ing, and ly. Here are a few things to remember when learning suffixes. Number one, some suffixes have more than one meaning. For example, the suffix er may suggest a person who performs an action, like a teacher. But er is also commonly added to the ends of adjectives and adverbs. They compare two things and show that one is more than the other, such as in faster and stronger. Number two, the spelling of a base word can change when a suffix is added. This is true of most base words ending in the letter Y. For instance, when we add the suffix N-E-S-S to the word crazy to make craziness, we replace the Y with an I. This rule is also true of many base words ending in a silent E when the suffix begins with a vowel. For example, in the words write, make, and manage, we drop the E in the words when we add ing to make writing, making, and managing. We also often drop the silent E before the suffix able, such as in usable. Be careful, though, because with some words we keep the E, such as in changeable and lovable.
There are additional suffix rules, but they deal with spelling and can be learned with time and practice. A thing to keep in mind about both prefixes and suffixes is that some are only used with some words. For example, we add the suffix ful to some nouns to mean full of, such as in the words beautiful or helpful. But we cannot add full to just any noun. You could not, for example, say loveful to mean full of love. So what are some ways that you can practice common prefixes and suffixes? One way is to use online flashcards from websites like Quizlet. You can choose sets of cards that are already made or create and use your own sets. Or you can make your own flashcards with pieces of paper. Once you've spent time practicing, take a news story or page in a book and look for words that have the prefixes and suffixes you learned. Then, use what you know about the meaning of the root words to guess the meanings of those words. Learning prefixes and suffixes will not only build your vocabulary, but can make unfamiliar English words a lot less frightening. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The Constitution became law once 9 of America's 13 original states ratified it. The Continental Congress set a date for the new plan of government to take effect, the first Wednesday in March of 1789. In 1789, the population of the United States was about 4 million. The 13 states had been loosely united for a short time, only about 10 years. Before that, they were separate colonies of Britain. Because the colonies were separate, they developed different ways of life, different economies, different traditions. Americans were fiercely independent, but the crisis of the American Revolution brought them together. Together, they celebrated the 4th of July, the day in 1776 when America declared its independence from Britain. Together, they fought British troops to make that declaration a political reality. And together they joined under the Latin phrase, e pluribus unum, one out of many. Yet they did not really consider themselves a national people. When the war ended, the soldiers returned to their home states. They still thought of themselves first as New Yorkers, or Virginians, or Marylanders. Americans of 1789 were sharply divided on the need for a national government. Many were afraid the new government would not survive. They feared the anarchy that would result if it failed. Others hoped it would fail. They wanted strong state governments, not a strong central government. Also in 1789, the American economy was improving after the destruction caused by the Revolutionary War. Agriculture, trade, and shipbuilding were coming back to life. Roads, bridges, and canals were being built. The country's economy still had many problems, however. Two major issues had to be settled. One was the repayment of loans made to support the Revolutionary Army. The other was the creation of a national monetary system. Both issues needed quick action. And before the new government could act, the old government still had work to do on other issues, like the question of a capital. At the time the states approved the Constitution, the Continental Congress was meeting in New York City. And that was where the Congress decided to place the new government. Later, the capital would be moved to Philadelphia for a while. Finally, it would be established in Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. Next, members of the Continental Congress had to decide when the states would choose a president. They agreed to March 4, 1789, the the same day the Constitution would go into effect. The states that ratified the Constitution chose electors to vote for a president. The result was not a surprise. They chose the hero of the Revolutionary War, George Washington. No one opposed the choice, except, perhaps, for George Washington himself. Here are actors having an imaginary conversation between James Madison and George Washington. Madison is trying to persuade Washington that he should be the new nation's first president.
Oh, sir, it must be you who serves as president. It is your influence that unites the states.
I can tell you honestly, I do not want the honor. I'm very much aware of my deficient education and the 10,000 embarrassments it will cause me in office. I would hope they could find a younger man. But I want nothing more but to return to Mount Vernon and tend to my farming.
But, sir, if your country should need you...
If called, I will serve.
Washington learned of his election while at Mount Vernon, his home in Virginia. He left for New York, where he was inaugurated on April 13th. Members of the new Congress were also elected on March 4th. One of the first things the Congress did was to reopen debate on the Constitution itself. Several states had set a condition for approving the document. They said a Bill of Rights listing the rights of all citizens must be added to the Constitution. Yale Law School professor Akhil Reed Amar says one of the most important parts of the Bill of Rights is its source, the people.
In effect, it's crowdsourced. And we, the people, actually say, where are the rights? And we get this Bill of Rights because of that conversation.
To many Americans, the Bill of Rights represents the heart and soul of the Constitution. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has said that when he reads the document, he gets chills.
There was always this underlying belief that we were entitled to be a full participant in we, the people.
Just what is this Bill of Rights, and what does it say? The Bill of Rights is the name for the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. The First Amendment deals with freedom of expression, including, as Justice Clarence Thomas points out, freedom of religion.
The First Amendment is what? Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or the free exercise thereof. In other words, stay out of it and leave people alone when it comes to their religion.
The First Amendment guarantees that religion and government will be separate. Congress cannot establish an official religion or interfere in the people's right to worship as they choose. The First Amendment also protects other rights. Here is the full text. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. In other words, people have a right to gather peacefully and to make demands of the government. Constitutional law expert Akhil Reed Amar says the idea of free expression can be found throughout the Bill of Rights.
And even before there's the text of freedom of speech, there's the practice of freedom of speech. Five times the Bill of Rights uses the same phrase, the people, in the first, and the second, and the fourth, and the ninth, and the tenth amendments.
Mr. Amar says he believes the Bill of Rights says the people so often because the document comes from the people. The Second Amendment deals with guns. Here is what it says. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Third Amendment says people may not be forced to let soldiers stay in their homes during peacetime. The next five amendments protect people's rights in the justice system. The Fourth Amendment protects people from unreasonable searches and seizures. It bars courts from approving warrants unless there is probable cause. And it says warrants should describe the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. The Fifth Amendment says people should not be tried for the most serious crimes unless a grand jury has first examined the evidence. It also bars people from being tried twice for the same offense. And it says the government cannot take people's property for public use without paying them a fair price. The Sixth Amendment says people accused of crimes have the right to a fair and speedy public trial by a jury. The aim is to guarantee that people are not kept in prison for a long time unless a jury has found them guilty of a crime. The Sixth Amendment also guarantees the right of the accused to be defended by a lawyer. It says they must be informed of the nature and cause of the charges against them. And it says they have the right to face and question their accusers. The Seventh Amendment guarantees the right to a jury trial in civil cases. The Eighth Amendment bars cruel and unusual punishments. The Ninth Amendment provides protection for other rights not stated directly in the Constitution. And the Tenth Amendment says any powers not delegated to the national government belong to the states or to the people. The exceptions are any powers that the Constitution prohibits states from having. So these first 10 amendments make up the Bill of Rights. Later, says law professor Akhil Reed Amar, more amendments were added to the Constitution.
As good as the founding was, the system kept getting better and better. We made amends for some of the flaws of the founders through a series of amendments, and that process continues today.
The Bill of Rights and the other changes that came later helped decrease the power of the federal government. Because these amendments limited the power of the federal government, many anti-federalists ended their opposition to the new government. Many agreed to help with the job of building the new nation. In all, 11 of the 13 states approved the Constitution before Washington was inaugurated as president. The last two states, North Carolina and Rhode Island, ratified it afterward. President Washington wanted the best men, Federalist or anti-Federalist, to be in his administration. The new nation needed strong leadership, and George Washington provided it.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.